The following program is an interview with Driftglass on the show Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties on KPON 89.5 Columbia, Missouri. We are grateful to KPON for permission to rebroadcast.
Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good evening, good evening. This is 89.5 KOPN Columbia. The name of the show is called Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties. And you're with me. My name is Greg Bush. Dan Vietz is away on assignment. We expect him back momentarily. And so let's get to right to our guest. Our guest tonight is Driftglass, and it is the pseudonym for a Chicago-based writer who has been blogging virtually every day about politics, culture, and media since 2005. He is the most recent weblog award winner for Best Individual Blogger, and his writing appears online in all kinds of places, including The Atlantic, Vanity Fair, and Crooks and Liars. He is also one half of The Professional Left, a weekly podcast on all things liberal, religious, literary, and weird that he does with his wife, the amazing Bluegal. And they recently finished up their 100th episode. It's available at not even www, just professionalleft.blogspot.com. And in the non-blogging world, Driftglass has been a software developer, a professor, a writer, an IT manager, a public policy wonk, a performance management expert, a grant writer, an executive, and several other things. And he also believes that to save the American middle class, we have to save advanced American manufacturing and to repair our broken political system. We have to eliminate corporate control of our media and shrink the modern conservative movement until it can drown in a bathtub Driftglass. Thank you for being with us here on Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties.
You did that real good, Greg. My pleasure.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Let's begin a little bit with why this matters to why blogging, why mainstream media, the kind of media that you do, the kind of media that we do here at KOPN, the kind that Amy Goodman does, which we play every day, a couple times a day, why that matters to people who care about civil liberties?
Well, cast your mind back. You and your listeners, cast your mind back to 2003, 2004. There was a war going on, still is, in Iraq. We had been lied into it. It was being royally botched. It was being misreported by every corporate media outlet, with a few exceptions, all the ones who had fallen for the okey-doke that had gotten this there in the first place. And everyone on the ground knew this was nonsense, knew they were being lied to. And they looked to their traditional media, the ones that they'd grown up with as kids, the Walter Cronkite media, the David Brinkley media, the Mike Royko media, for some kind of narrative that would explain this disparity between the reality they could see every day and the lies they were being fed by the corporate media. And nobody would tell them the truth. The corporate media was perfectly aligned with the right-wing blogosphere and the right-wing radio people who not only said, the war's going fine, everything's going great, the war will pay for itself, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you oppose the war, if you say bad things about George W. Bush, you're a bad American. You're a traitor. You're a liar. You are not to be listened to. You're a cheese-eating surrender monkey. This went on for a good long time until, frankly, bloggers started taking advantage of this free, very democratic platform of information to talk to each other. I remember after the 2004 election, I was just stunned. I couldn't believe I lived in a country that was, frankly, stupid enough to reelect the worst president in modern American history. And we were. And wandering the wilderness, I went looking for people who were equally shocked that we could be that screwed up as a country, and found all these bloggers, all these people who were having exactly the same conversation, who were asking the same questions. So as a vehicle of expressing yourself and a vehicle for finding, for two-way communication, because, you know, blogging is not blogging without comments. Blogging is not blogging without feedback. Like the best filmmakers, like the best writers, you're constantly reacting to what your peers are saying. It's an almost a real-time conversation that goes on all across the world. That is media. Because media is just the transfer method, the transmission belt of ideas between people. And it stopped being that about 20, 30 years ago. It started being this corporate prepackaged product that came with a party line. And really, it shows through as the corporate media shows through as this awful plastic thing that lies to us and deceives us on a regular basis. But not until the Iraq War really did it break through that, oh my God, our media lies to us a lot. And they're sort of in cahoots with a bunch of neoconservatives who also lie to us and have been lying to us for a long time. And it was that breakthrough moment when we found out that together, shouting loud enough and using pretty mean language and pretty foul language, and we're not called the de-effing hippies for nothing, that we could break through, we could push back, and we could demand an alternate narrative. We could demand the truth be told. And it took time, and we take two steps forward and one step back. But as a vehicle for expressing common citizen outrage at not that which is broken, because, you know, the world is an imperfect place, but the outrage of being lied to by people in suits who are paid lots of money and who don't seem to care that they lie to us and don't seem to care that their lies are transparent or foolish. As a vehicle for pushing back against that, blogging has been invaluable. And it's why I enjoy it, and it's why I still do it.
I thoroughly, I guess I wouldn't have you on without having some sort of agreement with you, and I'm not going to play a whole lot of devil's advocate.
You go right ahead. Right?
I don't know. I'm struggling to play devil's advocate because maybe we consume the same sorts of things. But with respect to, I cast my mind back to those days, and I think I had a very similar reaction to you. I also had a similar reaction of why doesn't the left in this country get together and pick somebody better than John Kerry? Back in 2004.
His name was John Dean. Howard Dean.
That's exactly right. And the corporate media definitely saw him as a threat. And
they dropped a ton of bricks on him and made him go away.
Maybe similar to what there could be some parallels to what's happening right now. Although screaming and being a respondent in a criminal complaint are two separate things.
Yeah.
So those are two separate things. But I had the same sort of reaction to you way back then. And I thought, oh, my gosh, if I hear one more straight, white, middle-aged, male millionaire tell me the way the world works, my head is going to explode.
Yeah.
Because everywhere I look, that's exactly what I see on TV. And so let me think of who these people are, the straight, white, male, middle-aged millionaires, who they look like and what kind of... And again, like we know, they're never gonna point out the corruption in the system. They're never going to do any of that sort of thing. They're so vested into it. Why would they do anything to take the legs out from something that has rewarded them so handsomely? And who are some of these people that you and I know, not personally, but who have been rewarded handsomely by others, co-conspirators? It's such a long list.
It's such a long list. There's a joke that I like because I wrote it. a long time ago, this is floating around the blogosphere, and it goes as follows. Cokie Roberts, to name a name. Dick Cheney is found on the White House lawn throwing burning kittens at homeless veterans. What are the first three words out of Cokie Roberts' mouth? And the answer is, but the Democrats.
It's false equivalency is what you're describing.
It's so automatic. They never pause in the conversation long enough to say, yeah, okay, let's talk about the fact that Robert Byrd was a Klansman in 1962. Yeah, well, we can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about the fact that the Democratic Party was a warehouse for bigots in the 1890s. I'm happy to have that conversation because I do understand American history. But let's talk about what happened just now. And they won't do it. In fact, I will impart to your listeners the secret weapon of blogging. It's not the software. It's not the HTML code. It's not even the fundraiser, which I do on a regular basis. It's remembering. Our secret weapon is that all of this junk is written down. All of the scurrilous objections to the Clinton war in Bosnia by the Republican Party, who said things like, well, of course it's okay to impeach the commander-in-chief during a time of war. In fact, you're betraying the Constitution if you don't impeach the commander-in-chief during a time of war.
Mm-hmm.
If his war fails, it's his fault. If he, it's a quagmire and it's going to collapse, and he's not really the president of the United States. The secret is the fact that nothing is happening to Barack Obama that is not a pale Xerox copy of exactly what happened during the Clinton years. Hmm. He ran on the same platform.
Yeah.
He walked into office with the same mandate. He was suddenly handed a big, stinking, burning bag of crap by the previous administration who had run up huge deficits. He was then told by Wall Street insiders, you can't do any of this stuff. You can't do health care reform. You can't do education reform. You can't do any of this stuff until you fix the deficit. He was told this by people who couldn't spell deficit 5 minutes before, because conservatives don't care about deficits when they're being run up by Reagan and run up by Bush and run up by Bush's little kid. They don't give a damn about that stuff when there's a Republican in office. It's only when the black guy from Chicago put his hand on the Bible that they suddenly learned how to spell deficits and wanted to take their government back. But if you go back and read the transcripts of what Republicans were saying in the 90s, Newt Gingrich being one of them, Newt Gingrich is an awful human being who pioneered hate speech on an industrial level. Newt Gingrich was the guy who had a thing called GOPAC back in the 90s, where he taught the freshman congressman, every time you stand in front of a camera, remember to say, Democrats are traitors. Democrats hate America. Just say it over and over and over and over again, and eventually it'll sink in. So this idea that both sides are doing it is just it's the big lie that keeps all the little lies intact. And the people who are in charge of keeping those big lies intact are people like David Gregory, who runs Meet the Press, David Brooks, who has a prominent column in the New York Times, who is a special irritant of mine, who writes 1,600 words a week, and essentially always preaching, both sides do it, both sides are equally wrong, and the only problem with Barack Obama is he was not sufficiently capitulatory to the Republican Party. And he writes the same damn column twice a week, every week, for years. And he still has a job at the New York Times. He leaves that job and goes over to NPR, where he's the reasonable conservative. He leaves that job and goes over to Meet the Press, where his friend David Gregory puts him in front of a camera, where he reads his column over again. He is a stunningly mediocre analyst and a truly awful writer, and yet he occupies this unique and very high place in the media. And there are just so many people like him that have no business being at the top of the journalism of a great country that you start to have to ask yourself, who's putting them there? Whose interests are being served by having these beltway insiders who do nothing, who literally, you can just go through any newspaper on any day and you'll find the same people over and over again saying, well, yeah, the Republicans are certainly crazy and they've lost their mind and they're a bunch of barbarians and they want to burn the place down, but the Democrats are just as bad. And then you ask them, well, name me one Democrat who's done anything that would qualify as a rounding error during the worst of the Bush years or the best of the Bush years. And they look at you like, how dare you ask me that question? Don't you know I'm lying here?
Here's
Don't
what
you
I hear.
See I'm running a scam here? How here's, dare you ask that question?
Here's what I hear. I hear Alan Grayson from Florida, and I'll say, yeah, but
yeah,
he lost.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah,
was, and that was it. And then then also...
Russ Feingold.
Though I like him.
but
he lost, right. And then they also hear, I hear like, well, the Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass the bill before we can, like, these are like these kind of three little mantras that are said kind of over and over and over again. And then I'm going to get you all riled up here. But first, I'm going to remind our listeners. I'm going to remind our listeners that you're listening to 89.5 KOPN Columbia. My name is Greg Bush. This is Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties. And my guest tonight is Drift Glass. You can go to his blog right now and leave comments for him at theprofessionalleft.blogspot.com.
I have the hidden video of the Herman Cain presser on my blog right now.
Let's just call him Mr. 6 months.
Sure.
Thomas Friedman. Because in about 6 months from now, it's really going to be a real specific. we're at a crossroads here, and in the next 6 months,
why
is either going
to
make or break the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War or any kind of war. We just need to wait 6 more months. Talk to me about Tom.
Tom Friedman. Well, one of the things that your listeners should know is that Tom Friedman is a billionaire. He married into, I believe, is the second largest real estate fortune in the United States. He is a staggeringly wealthy human being who has vast holdings and wealth and interest in keeping the corporate world just the way it is. He golfs with presidents. He flies to China whenever he wants to. So he's an extraordinarily rich man. There's nothing wrong with being a rich person. I admire people. I admire self-made millionaires. I think Stephen Jobs was a great man and with severe personality disorder, but that made him great. And so I admire people who apply themselves and become prosperous. And most people I know do. This is not, liberals don't hate people who do well for themselves. But it's never mentioned that, oh, by the way, Tom Friedman is a staggeringly wealthy human being, because that definitely is something that you might want to know when you're reading about his take on the common man and how much the common man needs austerity.
It's only mentioned when there's like George Soros. It's only mentioned when it's George Soros or Warren Buffett.
Yeah,
that's the only time it's mentioned that somehow, oh, but you know, he's really wealthy. It's somehow all of a sudden it became a bad thing when it's like we're not talking about his wealth at all. As a matter of fact, You're the one that brought it up. I'm just talking about an individual with good ideas.
Well, and Tom Friedman writes occasionally good stuff, but Tom Friedman is, at the top of the sins of Tom Friedman is he is a jaw-droppingly bad writer. I'm a writer. I have a long and strange career, but in my heart of hearts, I'm a writer. I admire people who can, rally the English language and put it at their command. Who can do things with language, who can move people, who can get people to stand up and be brave, who can explain to people the condition they're in, give them vocabulary to explain their condition. I admire Bobby Kennedy's speeches. I admire Martin King's speeches. I admire great speakers. And I think that the world of journalism, since it's a print medium, sort of demands that you have a basic understanding of the language you were born with. And Tom Friedman is, first and foremost, just a staggeringly bad writer who convinces CEOs who don't know what they're doing that he's got the inside track on crap that everybody knew was going on 15 years ago. He also blew the Iraq war. I mean, badly.
That's true. Yeah.
He famously went on the Charlie Rose show and explained to Charlie Rose, who said, well, now that the Iraq war is over and the peace has been won and everything is behind us, why did we go to Iraq? And Thomas Friedman basically said, we went because we could. We had to go over to that Arab world over there and pop that terrorism bubble and tell them, and this is a quote, suck on this. That was Tom Friedman's rationale for going to Iraq, because we could. And he said so. And as the Iraq war started to fall apart, Tom Friedman famously would say every 2, 3, 4, 5 months, give it another 6 months. In another 6 months, we'll decide. Until somebody, to their credit, I think it was Duncan Black, who blogs as Atrios over at a blog called Eschaton, said, wait a minute. You've been saying 6 months for like 3 years now. And you've said it every few months, and somebody tracked it and said, yeah, he's been saying, essentially, I'm not going to admit I was wrong. We'll just push this a little bit further down the road. And understand, we're not talking about a Monopoly game. We're talking about people dying for Tom Friedman's stupid mistake. We're talking about people, blood and treasure of this country being flushed down the toilet by neocons like Tom Friedman.
Right.
And his answer to, haven't you noticed that everything has gone horribly wrong and we were all lied to and this is a horrible mistake? His answer was, let other people go die for my screw-up for 6 more months. And that became called the Friedman Unit. The Friedman Unit is a flexible unit of time. You can look it up on Wikipedia. And for reasons, again, that passeth all understanding, Tom Friedman still has a column in the New York Times.
I think the most insulting thing with respect to that, because I do agree with you, the most insulting thing is somehow he's allegedly supposed to be a counterpoint to David Brooks.
He's their liberal.
Yeah, he's like loyal opposition. And that's the most insulting thing for me is that do you think that we're that dumb that, that I can't remember that 2 months ago you said 6 more months and you've been saying that every 2 months for 2 or 3 years? And who's going to hold them accountable? Where is there any sort of accountability with respect to the billionaires? Who's going to hold the billionaires accountable?
Here's your problem, Greg.
Yeah, all right.
You think too much.
That's a problem.
If you follow politics, if you follow culture, if you follow really any field of endeavor for a period of time, you start to notice who's right and who's wrong, who's in and who's out. As I'm sure your listeners know, fewer than half of the voters in this country ever bother to vote at all. And of the half that vote, about a third of them are crazy. So this is a problem. It's a problem because way too many people, for reasons that are both lazy and I think demonstrate really poor citizenship, but also are incredibly busy. You know, single moms and single dads working two jobs to keep a roof over their head don't have time to follow what the heck's going on in Uzbekistan. They really don't. So they rely on what their parents used to rely on, which is the précis, the summary of the news as given to them by people, by white men in suits, by, as I said, Walter Cronkite, David Brinkley, people like that. But the white men in suits are now David Brooks, Tom Friedman, and David Gregory. And so if your only exposure to politics or culture or media is passing briefly by the Sunday morning gas bag shows, what I call the mouse circus, once a week on your way out the door, and maybe picking up a little bit on NPR, and then you listen to Sean Hannity for both sides of the, so you want to be well-rounded, and then occasionally picking up something, paragraph that somebody's talking about in the New York Times, that is the sum total of a lot of Americans' knowledge. So they never bother to notice that the people that they see fleetingly every now and then are horribly wrong about everything. It's a puppet show. Yeah. And the people who put it on to be, to A, support the Beltway, media, Washington, defense industry, party line, the party of wealth, to support that party line absolutely down the line, and to give the most inoffensive possible message to the largest possible audience. And what is the most inoffensive message? What's the lazy man's reaction to politics? The guy who wants to kick back in his Barca lounger and just sneer at everyone and pretend he knows it all. His party line is, both sides suck.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, everybody sucks. Everybody's a crook. Mm-hmm. They're all in it. That kind of cynical, above it all, everybody in Washington is a liar, everybody in politics, both sides do it, is the lazy man's civics class. And they feed it to him with both hands. And so the common belief, if you pick one subject that I have been at war with personally for 5 years, actually a lot longer, it's this gigantic lie that both sides do it. Because if that's not true, if it's not true that both sides are equally and oppositely wrong about everything all the time, then you have to pick a side. Then you have to be willing to be wrong or right and live with the consequences. And when you've voted for George Bush twice, you have to be, George Bush and the party of personal responsibility twice. Then you have to be willing to stand up and take some damn personal responsibility for making that screw up and maybe learn from it. But laziness and cynicism and, frankly, the complete psychotic breakdown of the conservative movement makes it impossible to say these things in public. So instead we get both sides do it. If you say that, if you're Harold Ford Jr. on one side, or if you're Joe Scarborough on the other, and this sort of sock puppet, both sides are, both of these people are in on it, and you're willing to go on camera and just deride equally both sides, you'll have a lovely job in media.
And then
if you get up and say, you know what, one side is wrong. In fact, one side is crazy. In fact, that's a really big story. When one political party in the most powerful country on earth is actually certifiably insane, that's a big story. And when the media in that country refuses to report on it because that would be taking sides, that's a big story too. So that's where blogging comes in. That's where citizen main, what you're calling mainstream press.
Yeah, that's
what I would call main street press comes in.
Exactly.
Somebody has to counterpose an argument that says this is not true, and I refuse to be lied to any longer.
Great. I'm tired of being lied to as well. And so every now and then, every day. As a matter of fact, every day I need a breath of fresh air. Not all the time, because there is, at least for my own consumption, there is. Like, I want to know what the other side is saying, the corporate side is saying, just so that I can recognize it when the pablum is spat back upon my bib, as it were.
Well, you know what Sun Tzu said, the Chinese general, know your enemy and know yourself.
Yeah, there you go. That's, yeah. Uh-huh. Are you going to be able to stick around for a little bit longer?
If you'd like me a little bit longer, I'll
I would love you a little bit longer, as a matter of fact. Right. We're going to play a little bit of music. You're listening to 89.5 KOPN Columbia. This is Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties. My name is Greg Bush. My guest is Driftglass. We're going to some Amy Winehouse right now. See you on the other side.
Dun, 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 dun. You are listening to 89.5 Min Mazzari, source for news, the first talk and music of the world. It's more than radio, it's listener supported, it's community radio, KOPN, Columbia.
Back. Thank you, Amy Winehouse. Your Occupy Como thanks you for thanks the over 250 99 percenters who made their voices heard at our November 5th march and potluck, and announces a rally, potluck, and camp-in every Saturday starting at noon on Liberty Plaza on City Hall. Please come and invite every peaceful soul you know to bring art, food, signs, the kids, and yes, camping gear. No tents yet. Come by anytime. As we say, all night, all day, Occupy is here to stay. More info at OccupyComo.org. And then a public service announcement on November 9th at approximately 2 p.m. Eastern, which is 1 p.m. Central Standard. The Federal Emergency Management Agency will conduct a nationwide test of the emergency alert system. It will be heard on the radio and seen on local cable and satellite TV. As federal, state, tribal, territorial, and local governments prepare for and test their capabilities, this event serves as a reminder that everyone should establish an emergency preparedness kit and emergency plan for themselves, their families, communities, and businesses. Visit FEMA.gov for more information. And we are back now. My guest, our guest, KOPN's guest, is Drift Glass, which is the pseudonym for a Chicago-based writer who has been blogging virtually every day since 2005. It produces a lot of work, let me tell you. Every time I go back to it, there's pages and pages and pages that I need to go through. He's also one half of The Professional Left, a weekly podcast on all things liberal, religious, literary, and weird that he does with his wife, the amazing Blue Gal. They recently finished their 100th episode. He is also a Weblog Award winner for Best Individual Blogger, and his writing appears in all kinds of places, The Atlantic, Vanity Fair, and Crooks and Liars. And we have been talking about straight white millionaires who tell us the way the world works. Male.
Very well played. Yeah.
That's what we have been talking about, and how you're listening to some straight white, but we are not millionaires. And we are going to tell you a little different story about the way the world works, or the way the world actually works, as opposed to the way that the corporate folks want us to believe the way.
Yeah.
So out of nowhere, and I just read this little PSA here. This is how local we are for our local Occupy Como here on their City Hall Plaza. So kind of out of nowhere. And if you notice, what was your sense of how the corporate media, they didn't know how to handle all of these people sending onto Wall Street. And as a matter of fact, at the beginning, they had there weren't that many people on Wall Street. It was just really just a handful of people. If you think about how big Manhattan is, they had no idea what to do.
It had reached a saturation point.
Yes,
you had, frankly, you had the fake, or the, I should say, fake is not entirely true. You had the you had the hothouse orchid uprising of the Tea Party. and I'd like to remind your listeners of a very simple thing. There is no Tea Party.
Yeah.
That's the dirty secret. There is no Tea Party. There is the Republican base, the same Republican base that's been there for 30 years, the same Republican base who cheered for the impeachment of Bill Clinton, the same Republican base who was recruited into the party by the Southern Strategy, the same often bigoted, often ignorant, very angry, very ill-informed, often religiously fundamental base of the Republican Party. They just, like German soldiers after World War II, burned their uniforms and pretended they were never there. Us, we had nothing to do with the Republican Party. Why? They put on a bunch of tri-corner hats and started going to the parks and saying, yeah, we had nothing to do with politics. We were never there. And you look past them to their minivans, and they're covered with, past their Medicaid, you know, government-paid-for scooters. On their minivans are all their Bush-Cheney bumper stickers.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the fake uprising. That was the, and the media just glommed onto that because they were colorful and they were loud and they had their own corporate media, Fox. They had their own funding base, the Koch brothers. They had lots and lots of support. And you had Fox News broadcasters out there on the ground using Fox News, using Rupert Murdoch's fascist corporation to promote this quote-unquote grassroots organization that was being organized by Dick Armey, former Republican bigwig.
And the crazy thing is that that Fox could do that, and these other news media outlets could do that. And the reason why CNN co-hosted a Republican presidential debate with the Tea Party, because the target was not corporations or corporate America.
Exactly.
The target was the
poor people.
The poor people and the Kenyan Muslim usurper.
Yes.
That's who the target was. So
the usual suspects. Poor people, brown people, uppity women, and
women,
dirty
right.
hippies.
Yes.
And as long as we all agree that dirty hippies and uppity women and brown people destroyed the global economy somehow, and secretly deregulated banks and got us into Iraq and ran up a huge deficit. I don't know how they did all those things, but apparently they did, all while there was a Republican in the White House and Republicans controlled the Senate and the House. Then you can join our movement.
Yes.
But if you start talking about how corporations did this, how multinational, global, transnational corporations have screwed this country and gotten really stupid, angry white people, many of whom are from the South, many of whom are really don't like brown people and really, really don't like long hairs and are basically Archie Bunker reborn. have gotten them to vote to commit economic suicide on behalf of corporate interests. That's the Tea Party. And so they were completely friendly to the same, they all had the same enemies. Fundamentalists, that's not quite true. Conservative evangelical fundamentalists want to take down the U.S. government because it gets in the way of having a theocracy. Conservatives want to take down the government because it gets in the way of a corporate agenda. They both hate the government for entirely different reasons, but they both have a common enemy, which means anybody who thinks the government could actually do good things, the government is actually the people, and the people can productively get together from time to time to do things that no individual can do by themselves, must be the enemy.
You know, and those people are the same people who call 911. Those are the same people who, when their neighbor breaks into their home, they're going to call the law enforcement. They're going to ask for some help when they're having a heart attack and you've got to fly a helicopter to their house or that sort of thing.
That darn socialist Coast Guard.
Right. Yes, exactly.
You know, that pulls you out of the water when you've had too much to drink.
Right.
But that was the fake uprising. And the thing that, again, the thing that drives me crazy about being a liberal, I'm a proud liberal, is we've been right about everything. That's what drives me nuts. If we've been wrong or wrong half the time, yeah, I have no problem with that. I have no problem being wrong. I'm happy to learn from my mistakes and take corrective action. But we've been right about lots of things, about most things, for the last 30 years, and the other side's been dead wrong about everything. So one of the things that almost every liberal I know said the minute this Tea Party thing broke out, the corporate-backed Glenn Beck tax day Tea Party nonsense broke out, was just a bunch of Republicans. This is the Republican base. This is nothing new. These people didn't precipitate out of thin air. This is the same damn Republican base that's always been there, and they're now wearing funny hats and waving don't tread on me flags, but it's the same damn people who've been making the same stupid mistakes for 30 years, and now there's a black guy in the White House, and they've freaked out. And every news media I know of said, no, that's not true. They're brand new. This is a brand new, shiny story. Oh, look how interesting they are. Look how outright. They wear little tea bags on their hat. That's so cute. Every time 12 of them get together in Ramada Inn, we're going to cover it wall to wall for 24 hours. And it turns out, a year later, people started doing polling. Yeah, about 70-80% of them are basically Republican voters. Same people who've always been ticked off at the government. Same people. They always hate the same people. They're disgruntled, old, cranky white people who love their Medicare, love their Medicaid, love their Social Security, love their public roads, love their public parks, and hate the government. And don't see any connection between the two, except that they kind of really do. Matt Taibbi did a wonderful interview with a bunch of Tea Partiers called, if I remember correctly, Matt Taibbi of the Rolling Stone, I think called Tea and Crackers, where he actually did reporting on this, you know, journalism?
Right, exactly.
Might have heard about it.
Reporting.
Yeah, he put on his shoes and went to Kentucky and actually talked to these people over an extended period of time.
Those of you who watch TV infotainment will not recognize it, but it is actually reporting that Matt Taibbi has done.
And he just came back and said, yeah, they're nuts. They're nuts. They're exactly who you thought they were. They sponge off the government largesse. But my takeaway from it is how nihilistic they are. They have no objection to massive government spending as long as it's spent on them. Your conservatives have no problem with a fascist government as long as they get to run it. It's when somebody else might actually be in the White House that freaks them out. So Matt Taibbi was on a program. He was on some election coverage program with David Gergen. David Gergen, for those of you who don't know, was the David Brooks at PBS, the NewsHour, before David Brooks took that seat. He's the deep-voiced, very serious, very reasonable conservative who has, you know, both sides do it. And he's gone on to serve 3 or 4 different presidents and so forth. And Matt Taibbi came into this serious election coverage and said, no, I've talked to these people, they're crazy. And David Gergen basically crapped himself and said, you can't say that. David Gergen, who hasn't left D.C. and wouldn't be caught dead within a mile of these folks' double-wide trailer parks, is very happy to opine about what the average man thinks and believes without ever actually meeting one. And Taibbi came into inside the perimeter and said, no, these people are crazy. They're crazy.
Yeah.
They don't care about the truth. They don't care about facts. You can hit them with every fact in the world, and they'll just call you a liberal liar and run happily back to the loving arms of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And Gergen just freaked because you're not allowed to say that. You can't
right.
say
I
that
think he actually said those words. Like, you just can't say that. Actually,
yes,
exactly. you can't say that. Well, I went and talked to them, and that's my takeaway, is that, in fact, they are that mental.
Yeah. And that was
sorry.
I'm sorry. I got a little off track.
Yeah.
You get me talking about these things, Greg. And
I know.
So
I knew we could fill it
uprising,
out. Yes.
The real uprising was Occupy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. This is for real, I think. This makes sense to me. So far, anyway. I mean, who knows? Yeah. Maybe there's going to be the Occupy sweatshirts made, you know, with...
Oh, there will be.
You know, I think so, too. Made in Saipan by Willie Tan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with forced sterilization of the women and all the stuff that Tom DeLay loved out there.
There'll be a hard Occupy cafe in every major American city.
A hard Occupy
cafe. You can have grilled cheese a la hippie there in 10 years. But for now...
Yes.
It seems to be the real deal, and and whatever they accomplish. And I was initially dubious, and I'm still, you know, I don't want to be a backseat driver. I'm very glad these people are in the streets and sleeping there and demanding to be paid attention to and respected. I absolutely am supportive of that 100%. If they've done nothing else, they have made the corporate media freak themselves out collectively. There's that scene from Animal House near the very end where Kevin Bacon, a young Kevin Bacon, mm-hmm. in his ROTC uniform, is jumping up and down screaming, "All is well!"
Yes, that's right, exactly.
And he's just run over by this crowd, and he keeps insisting that everything's fine, and they just stampede over him and leave him flattened in the sidewalk. The corporate media has had exactly the same reaction. David Brooks wrote like 4 or 5 consecutive columns basically begging people to stop paying attention to these guys. They're just, no, please, look away.
Yes.
They're not real. They're just a bunch of smelly hippies. They don't know what they're talking about, and on and on and on and on. And the reaction, that old Gandhi quote, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you. We're about there now.
Yeah.
Then they hate you, I think, and then you win.
They fight you. Like
they fight you.
Yeah. And we're about there now. Yeah, we've seen that in Oakland where... I was listening to somebody recently that when the institutions that are supposed to safeguard citizens end up mm-hmm. attacking them, is it time to call out the National Guard to prevent law enforcement from abusing the citizenry?
Yeah.
You know, we have a permit. They said this for the mm-hmm. I mean in Occupy DC. This is the peace one, not the Wall Street one, but for the occupation of DC there on the mall, we have a permit. It's called the First Amendment.
Yeah.
And as long as we are peaceful, this is what we're going to do. And I think that, I mean, who knows who the General MacArthur will be? That will come on out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Hoovervilles. And I talk to people who are my contemporaries in 10 years previous, and they've never heard of the Hoovervilles. They've never heard of any of these sorts of things. And I'm
never heard of the Bonus Army.
Yeah, right. The Bonus Army. There's another one. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know the
Washington camped out in Washington. These were veterans.
That's right.
Who were starving.
Mm-hmm.
And had served their country and said, "Look, you promised us a bonus. It's great if you can pay us in 10 years, but we need it now. We're starving now." And they were bulldozed. They ran the tanks up against these guys. It's not, you know, we turn on the people who serve us very quickly in this country, very quickly. And you know, people forget that the anti-war protest movement had a substantial number of veterans in it. I can tell you that one of my acquaintances, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but went and served in Afghanistan for about a year and a half in Special Forces, came back and went to Wisconsin to drive people to the polls for John Kerry. The people who serve this country, and I mean everybody from teachers and cops.
Thank you. That's
soldiers.
Exactly right. Because when you hear about public service, it should not be only a metaphor for the military. That needs to be, we are all public servants that, like you said, teachers, firefighters, law enforcement. Exactly.
And I will freely admit I'm biased. Everybody in my family is a teacher or principal. You know, when my parents got divorced, they married teachers and principals. My sister's a teacher. I'm a teacher. You know, I swore I'd never teach, and I ended up teaching at a college for a while. Teachers do God's work, and so do cops,
mm-hmm.
and so do firemen, and so do judges, and so do public attorneys, and there's a nice long list of people who keep civilization alive in this country that are paid on the public dollar.
Nurses.
As long as the economy was cooking along, everybody was cool with that.
Right.
But now that the economy has been tanked, thanks to some very, very rich, bad people playing casino with our money, they're looking for someone to kick. They're not looking for someone to blame. They're looking for someone to take it out on. And the only people, there's an old story about why slavery was so popular in the South. It was economic, and it was religious, it was cultural, but it was also, if you're poor, it helps. If you're poor and you're ignorant, you need somebody to look down on. You need someone to feel better than.
Last place aversion. There's
public servants have become the new whipping boy for the right wing. They need somebody to blame for the fact that their lives are screwed. And rather than blame the people who can hurt them, who are really actually to blame, the transnational corporations and the politicians and media that are owned by those corporations, they look for the cheapest, easiest targets, and they start picking on teachers. They start picking on working-class people, and that's just scurrilous. Mm-hmm. They need to stop that. And because they won't stop it on their own, we need to make them stop it. And the way we do it is by blogging, by writing, by talking, by never letting them get away with it in a public setting, and by occupying a few hundred major cities.
And by occupying a couple hundred. And I think there is now, particularly with the mainstream media, and I mean our media here, the mainstream media, there is now, I get a real sense of a movement of actually holding people accountable when they're wrong. There are so many, there's a handful of people who, these very well could have been legacy cases from Ivy League who's never been told that their diaper actually smells bad. They've never been told that. And now we actually have this thing called, I don't know, videotape. And we have this thing called internet. And we can say, hey, but this is what you said. I can show it to you. Are you going to disavow this now? And there's some people that are doing that. I think you're one of the – who are some other people that are holding some folks accountable here?
Well, the original – was George Orwell. I'm not saying he's the grandfather, but he's the one who made memory the great enemy in 1984. What I call strategic forgettery. the idea that we will all agree to forget every bad thing conservatives did, that makes them infinitely reprogrammable. They can just change their positions 180 degrees on any given day, depending on what Rush Limbaugh wants, because they don't remember what they believed a year ago. Mm-hmm. So what you find on the opposite side of that ledger are people like Matt Taibbi, who does very good work at the Rolling Stone. One of my personal favorites is a guy named James Walcott, who writes for Vanity Fair, who has a wonderful book out called Lucking Out that I'm not going to promote because, damn it, I'm going to promote my own stuff here. But he's a really good writer and has been around in New York since forever. I love Tom Hartman. I listen to him whenever I can and read whatever he has to say. You mentioned Amy Goodman. She's quite awesome. I like the Crooks and Liars blog. Every day I go over there, and it's not just because my wife helps run the place, and it's not just because I'm a contributor there. You know, I also like what they do. But the Crooks and Liars, for example, was one of the original video blogs that said, here is what you said last year, just like you said. You can't. I'm not going to let you lie to me because here's you on tape. And two of the most fearless, I would argue, and insidious. Insidious is not the right word. Fearless and clever bomb throwers, insiders, people doing the most brilliant attack jobs for our people are Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. They have marshaled humor. They have marshaled the great, powerful English language, the great Mark Twain tradition of using humor, using satire to take down your enemies, to do great, noble public service. And I think that it's not a surprise that a staggeringly large number of people below a certain age get a lot of their news from Comedy Central because they learn that the corporate media is lying to them and won't tell them what's going on, so they go over to Colbert, and they go over to Jon Stewart and see what's going on there. I miss the likes of Mike Rudko from Chicago, who was a great and good journalist who could report on the street level. There are people like that who I have nostalgia for, but going forward, I look to the bloggers, I look to people at The Nation and Mother Jones who know what they're talking about.
In These Times, I just got my subscription here to In These Times as well. They've alerted me to all sorts of Yeah.
And there are plenty of people out there. And if you, the cool part about the internet is that they're all connected now.
Right.
If you tap a vein of really good writing, really good analysis, somebody who just resonates with you. For me, that person was a guy lamented. He died several years ago, named Stephen Gilliard.
Mm-hmm.
I could just feel the electricity coming off of this guy's writing in 2004, 2005. He's the guy who kicked my butt and said, you need to stop commenting here and go do your own stuff. And I did, because you didn't say no to Steve. But he was one of the original front page contributors to Daily Kos, back when it was just getting started. So there's this, we're building up our own history, mm-hmm. our own bunch of really good analysts, our own old gray heads, if you will. Digby's another good one. If you ever are looking for somebody who writes really well and writes on topic, mm-hmm. go to Hullabaloo and read what Digby has to say. And I have my personal favorites. I like Patocio at Vagabond Scholar a lot. And you'll have to be prepared for the fact that a lot of these people swear. We use the same language, but we use it more like George Carlin does than like David Brooks does, because we noticed that being nice wasn't getting the job done, so we decided to be nice and be clear, but be blunt and use a couple of F-words in there to make sure that you knew it was coming from us and not from some corporate source.
And you guys, I will say that you guys are on the front lines of ensuring that we cannot be hoodwinked and give up our civil liberties, give up things, that it's liberty mixed with justice, I think, as well, and accountability. And that is something that I think really, and I think a lot of people know, really lacks. There is something to satire, what you were talking about with the Comedy Central folks, and using parody and that sort of thing. That doesn't tell you how to go forward. That just is a funny way to show you how you're being lied to and how the people that say certain things are, like how they're being manipulated. Those are kind of those useful tools.
When you know that there's something broken about the world, you will look for someone who can explain that brokenness to you.
Yeah, that sinking feeling. All have that sinking feeling. Let's find out what that sinking feeling is and not attach it to like any sort of particular party, but we can attach it to... There's one group of people in this country who are actively trying to prevent people to vote right now. And there's another group of people that are willing to drive whomever to the polls because democracy and our republic is just that important. And so let's think about who those people are. I have personally helped individuals vote for Green Party, Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, Republican Party, and the DFL. This is back in Minnesota. And the DFL, I personally helped all those people vote because when they're invested in the process, we are going to get a better result. Because now all of a sudden, I've noticed that after I helped these individuals vote, they started paying attention more.
Yes.
And if you can get somebody to pay attention, exactly. When you get somebody to pay attention, then they get that sinking feeling, and now you can offer them saying, hey, let's put a name to that sinking feeling and come up with reasonable policy, reasonable understanding, and let's not be hoodwinked or taken advantage of by straight, white, middle-aged male millionaires who want to tell us the way their world works.
With,
please.
My bastardization of Abraham Lincoln that I often end some of my blog posts with, and that is, we as a nation cannot long endure half fox and half free.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I hear that. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Driftglass, this has been a pleasure. I've heard you so often, and it's been great having a dialogue with you this last hour, and maybe we'll get you back on again. Folks, who listeners out there, go over to listen to The Professional Left, a weekly podcast that Driftglass does with his amazing, inimitable wife, the amazing Blue Gal. Congratulations.
Are you drinking again, Greg?
No, not at all. I've been in class all day, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, I know.
And congratulations on your 100th episode. I think it's a really great milestone. I'd like to tack on another zero to that in a few more years' time.
Oh, bless your heart. Thanks a lot. And thank you. This has been entirely my privilege, and thanks to you, to your listeners, for their kind attention.
Cheers. Listen to us on www.kopn.org as well. We'll have the podcast up in a little bit. Driftglass, be well. So that was my guest here on Sex, Drugs, and Civil Liberties. We'll talk to you next week. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.